again, this is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 15, Text 14. Translation is, one who concentrates all mental activities in me as the Supersoul, of that phase of the Mahatattva which manifests the chain of fruitive activities, obtains from me, whose appearance is beyond material perception, the most excellent mystic perfection called Prakamya. Please repeat.
One who concentrates
all mental activities
in me
as the Supersoul,
of that phase
of the Mahatattva,
which manifests the chain of fruitive activities,
obtains from me whose appearance is beyond material perception,
the most excellent mystic perfection
called Prakamya.
Purport
by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, founder Acharya Vrishvam. Srila Veeraraghava Acharya explains that the word sutra, or thread, is used to indicate that the Mahatattva sustains one's fruitive activities, just as a thread sustains a row of jewels. Thus, by fixed meditation in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the soul of the Mahatattva, one can achieve the most excellent perfection called Prakamya. Avyakta Janmanaha indicates that the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears from the avyakta, or spiritual sky, or that His birth is avyakta, beyond the perception of material senses. Unless one accepts the transcendental form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no possibility of obtaining Prakamya or any other genuine mystic perfection. Om Jnana Timanantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guroho Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tatta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Mahati Atman Yasutre Dharyan Mai Manasam Prakamyam Parameshtyam Ne Vindate Avyakta Janmanaha. One who concentrates all mental activities in me as the Supersoul of that phase of the Mahatattva which manifests the chain of fruitive activities obtains from me, whose appearance is beyond material perception, the most excellent mystic perfection called Prakamya. We're continuing our discussion of the description of the mystic yoga perfections. Uddhava has requested Lord Krishna to explain this to him. So Krishna is going through the list, one after the other. The other day we heard about how one who meditates on Krishna as the essence of atomic particles attains Lakhima Siddhi. And yesterday we heard that if someone meditates on the element of ego generated from the mode of goodness, we get the Prapti Siddhi, anything that you want. Here, it's even more valuable because here we're talking about Prakamya Siddhi. What does Prakamya Siddhi mean? Whatever you want, you can get it. So what is the use of Prapti Siddhi if you cannot get what you want? Prapti means to get something. So each of these, it seems, is getting a little bit more valuable. So that it's explained here, Viraragavacharya's being quoted in the purport. Now, several things are being explained. First of all, Madhvacharya, in his commentary on this verse, he says, Sutre sthite mayi, grihapita idivat. Sutre means, in this word, in this verse, well, sutra means what? What does sutra mean?
Concise statement.
Okay, that's one meaning. Anything else? Sutra. Sutra mani vina eva in Bhagavad Gita?
See?
No. String.
Oh, string.
As pearls are strung on a thread, sutra mani vina eva. Krishna says this. He gives this very example in Bhagavad Gita. So, therefore, Srila Prabhupada translates this as the chain of fruit of activities, one activity after another, just like beads on a string. This is our life. Not life, lives. So, Madhvacharya says, Sutre sthite mayi means to be situated in me. Grihe pita itivat, just like the foundation of a house. If you build a house, you know that you have to have a strong foundation. So the Lord is the foundation of material existence. The Lord is even the foundation of our material existence. And when one recognizes that all this facility is being given to us by the Lord to fulfill our dreams and our hopes and our desires, then one can have a chance of meditating in this way. Mahati Atmani. This means, Mahati here means the Mahat Tattva. What is Mahat Tattva? The way that this material world is created is such that the elements are all created. We have the spiritual energy, which is called in the Vedas as Tripad Vibhuti. The majority of the Lord's energy is in the spiritual world. This world is called the Ekapad Vibhuti, one quarter of the Lord's creation. And it's created out of the raw stuff of material existence, which is called Pradhan, undeveloped material existence. When Pradhan is crystallized into the Mahat Tattva, then what do we get? What is in the Mahat Tattva? What is the Mahat Tattva?
Earth, water, fire, air, and
ether. The Mahabhutas, Pancha Mahabhutas, means the great elements. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. And the subtle elements?
Mind,
intelligence, false ego. These are the things that we're encased within in this material body, and this is the things that we're encased within in this universe. We discussed this yesterday. The physical body of a human being represents the external universal body. That's discussed also in Purusha Sukta. Anyway, so Mahati means in the Mahat Tattva, and Atmani. Atma means in the self. Whose self? Or Atma means soul also. So in the soul. What soul?
Supreme soul.
In the Supreme Soul. So when we meditate that this Mahat Tattva is nothing but the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is sustaining our chain of repeated births and deaths, and fruit of activities that generate those repeated births and deaths. Just like so many beads are strung on a thread, This is the idea. Sutre sthite mayi grihe pite devat. Just like the foundation. Another way to put it is that instead of a thread, you can call it a foundation, adhara. This is, I think, what Viragavacharja also says this. He says, sutre, bahumaninam sutre. It was like a thread with so many jewels. Iva. Svakaryanam bahunam adhara bhute mahati. This mahatattva, in this mahatattva, it has become the basis of so many activities that we perform, so many tasks that we perform. Mahatattva sharirake mayi. So this mahatattva is considered to be, in some sense, you can say it's the body of the Supreme Lord. So if we meditate on who is the real soul of this universe, Krishna, then we can qualify for this siddhi called Prakanya Siddhi. And it's described here as Padameshtyam. Sridhar Swami, in commenting on the Srimad Bhagavatam, on this verse, he says, Padameshtyam sarvotkrishtam prakashyam vindate. Sarvotkrishta means the most excellent thing. So how do we do that? Mayi manasam dhariyet. You have to fix your mind on God. So we can try to fix our mind in this abstract way. That's something we'll need a lot of help with, most likely. Why? Because how does Krishna describe himself here? Where do you get this perfection from? Me, from me. And who am I? Avyakta Janmana. That's the next half of the verse. Avyakta Janmanaha. He whose birth is either imperceptible. Remember how Krishna was born? Who saw Krishna being born?
Vasudeva.
No, they didn't see it. Nobody saw it. Therefore, he's called Avyakta Janmana. Or another way that Jiva Goswami gives two interpretations. Here he says, Avyaktam indriyagamyam janma pradurbhavo yasya tasyamam yadva vyaktam jagati cha prakatam ityadi. In other words, things that are vyakta, things that are manifest, they're happening on the platform of gross matter. But Krishna's body, he says in Bhagavad Gita, is not made out of the material elements. What verse am I thinking of? Krishna says his transcendental body never deteriorates. Ajopisan abhyayatma bhutanam ishvaropisan parkatim samadhishthaya sambhavani atmanayana. Out of his own spiritual potency, Krishna manifests to our vision his eternal transcendental form. He doesn't have a form made out of the Mahatattva, or any of its constituents. We have forms made on the Mahatattva, but we only have them for a few years. And according to our Svakarmana, according to our own activities that we perform, we're pushed out. That's the design of this place. We're pushed out and have to find some other refuge. So, this is all arranged in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Karmana daivane trena jantur dehu prapateye. Our birth is arranged by our own karma. Daivane trena, under the supervision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, this is the idea. He is the Atma of the Mahatattva. He is transcendental to it. He doesn't have to undergo this process of birth and death through karma the way that we do. And if we fix our minds on him as the soul of this basis of material existence, then we can actually hope to attain this Prakanya Siddhi, if we want that. So Avyakta Janmana means, one, his birth is not witnessed by anyone in this world. Or two, he's born from the avyakta. What is the avyakta? The spiritual energy. It's not manifest in material senses. So, That's Prakhanda city, and it's described here as the most excellent of all cities, Parameshtyam. Parameshti means the best thing. So these things are also stated in the purport. And if anybody has any questions or any comments about this, we can discuss it. But I think it should be pretty clear. I hope, hopefully, it's clearer now than it was in the beginning. Anybody have any questions? Yes.
Thank you for class, Prabhuji. The first one's kind of a waggish question, but it just occurred to me in a weird way. If someone's developing these mystic perfections, and even if they're doing it imperfectly, but they're thinking about Krishna and they're trying to develop them, and even if they get the, like you mentioned yesterday, the less powerful ones, the less spiritual ones, can someone with these kind of powers request things like world peace? Can they say, I want the people to become devotees? Is that ever a goal of the mystic perfections? Or are the mystic perfections limited to things you can do for yourself?
Well, this is a good question, and it reminds me of a passage of the Srimad Bhagavatam that I just spoke on the East Coast. Canto 5. Prahlad Maharaj and the residents of Harivarsha. Jambudweep is divided into different varshas, sections. And we are, of course, in Bharatvarsha. But Prahlad Maharaj resides in Harivarsha. And he prays to the Lord in this way. Swasti astu vishvasya khala prasidatam jayant bhutani shivam mitodhya. Manashta bhadram bhajatara bhukshaje aveshyatam no madhirabhyahitaki. This verse actually is, by the way, it's written over the doorway of the Krishna Janmasthan in Mathura. It's a well-known verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada quotes it quite a bit as well. The meaning is, may the entire universe be auspicious, swasti astu vishvam, and kala prasidatam, one may doubt that if he's wishing auspiciousness or prosperity, you can say, for the entire universe, then that's also going to empower the demons who are harassing devotees like the Lord himself. So that is a problem there. Therefore he says, kala prasidatam, may all the demons be pacified. So he's qualified his benediction. And svastiyastu vishvasya khala prasidatam jayantu bhutani shivam mitodhya. Thinking about each other's welfare, may they all pray for auspiciousness for each other. Because sometimes we are envious, and sometimes we actually don't think of each other's welfare. Not sometimes, quite a bit of the time. So we need to do that. And then he gives the method, how we do it. Manashcha bhadram. Our minds have to be auspicious. So how do our minds become auspicious? Bhajatara dhokshaje. By worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, dhokshaja. And then his real benediction that he's asking is this. Aveshyatam no matirabhyahaitaki. May we enter deeper and deeper into this consciousness without any motive, ahaitaki. So it would seem that he's praying for the welfare of the entire universe. He's got his mystic city, certainly he's doing better than us. So that's one example. Is that okay?
Yes.
But actually, all we really have to do is engage in pure devotional service and pray that the entire world can do so as well. This is, if you notice, this is what Prahlad was praying for. And then everything automatically becomes auspicious because there's no question of anything being inauspicious if one is engaged in devotional service. So the best way to work for the auspiciousness of the world, even better than just praying, is to actually do something. We distribute books. We go on Harinam Sankirtana. We give out prasadam. We make sure that whoever we meet is elevated by that association. Although we meet each other briefly in this world, the association should be ennobling. It should be elevated. And we can do that. At least we can work on that. So this is the instruction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Is that okay? Anything else? Yes. Mission of God.
I think that we're going to serve the movies with giving us a series of classes on the hot talk one time that I went to. And he described it to be sort of like a kind of sound like the Big Bang in a sense. You know, like it, not a Big Bang that it's uncontrolled, you know, like the scientists think everything's bang and it's all fell randomly and accidentally and this and that. But a Big Bang that's completely controlled. He said it's like a Mahaprabhu was the all the material energy combined. It sounded like sort of like a big rock almost and then Lord Rama does something and it all scatters all over.
They separate.
Can you tell me a little bit about what
this is described in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's described throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam in different places. We don't need to go through the whole thing. But basically, Krishna sets the thing in motion, and he does it through his agents. Brahma is one of them. The creation is already there, and the matter is already manifested. But Brahma organizes things. He engineers all the things. He's building this universe on the basis of these gross elements that Krishna has injected within the material nature. Okay? Not our time.
Thanks for coming down this morning speaking. What kind of a question has to do with the refutal of this conception that everything emanates from the Supreme Being? And we know throughout Prabhupada's teachings, he's established Krishna as the original person. We have so many famous verses as Sharkaram, Krishna, Sachin, and Nadir, Nadir Govind, Sanakaram. So Nadir, Nadir Govind, the people of Pamukkah. So Prabhupada gives this argument. He said that when you look at a person, all people have a beginning and an end. But the Supreme Person can be distinguished by not having a beginning or an end. So my question is that, you know, how do you establish that in, you know, in a practical way that people can accept it?
Okay. Is that a general question or is that a personal question?
General question. I have a personal too.
There are different ways of doing that, depending on the audience, really. You know that when we're preaching, everything is tailored around the needs of the audience. That's why I'm asking. Because if it's a personal question, I can only tell you what I do. I would stress the Achintya Shakti, as in fact Jiva Goswami does in his throughout his Sandarbhas. You can even go so far as to say that the basic thesis of his Sandarbhas is this Achintya Shakti. And why is that so important? Because we have to recognize at a certain point that not only is the Supreme Lord Achintya, but actually everything is ultimately Achintya. We can't really understand very much of anything. For example, for just about every argument that you might raise in order to so-called prove the existence of God, someone else can raise an argument that disproves the existence of God. And this goes on forever and ever and ever. And it can't be reconciled. The only reason it cannot be reconciled is because we are attached to the limitations of logic. Once you're ready to step outside of that box of limited, mundane logic and dive into the subjective experience of Krishna consciousness, then these questions lose their relevance 100%.
So So would you, you know, qualify that by saying that it requires qualification on the part of the audience to actually discuss spiritual subject matter? In other words, if somebody's a spiritual, you know, ignoramus, right? What access do they have? So I think then the natural, you know, point would be that, well, it requires qualification on the, on our parts to come to that, you know, ability, or to come to that state of understanding.
Okay.
Hey, this question came to me also. It's you know, when we talk about motivation, here, well, two things came to me. One is this avakya conception that's being presented here. And the of course, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna saying parampara, evam parampara prakya. But my question is that, see, Krishna, he also appeared to people that were materialistic.
Mm.
So we're stating, you know, that within the practice of Krishna consciousness, it requires complete surrender to perceive anything spiritual. But on the other hand, we have historical, you know, documents that are, you know, written by practically every biographer of that day, stating that Krishna was perceived by people that had no spirit. In fact, they were demonic.
Mm-hmm.
How do you qualify that?
Well, that's a standard thing that Krishna does. He comes from time to time out of his causeless mercy and displays himself even to the eyes of the mundane. But although they saw his form, they didn't see it as it was. That's the problem. Like Duryodhana, he was certainly in touch with Krishna, he saw Krishna, but did he really see Krishna? Because, you know, he couldn't surrender. So it's arguable as to, you know, how much they perceived. Or, for that matter, you don't need to go back 5,000 years. Every one of us is coming in front of the Supreme Personality of God every day and seeing him. Some of us even dress him. We feed him. But, you know, he doesn't reveal himself so easily. Not to everyone. He may reveal himself somewhat, and we can say that we're in the same category. Duryodhana saw Krishna somewhat. We also see Krishna somewhat. So it's mercy. He's given us mercy, but, you know, do you really see Krishna the way that Srila Prabhupada sees Krishna? That's another question. So, in that sense, you can say, yes, the qualifications, we have to have the qualifications. We have to engage in pure devotional service, and he'll reveal himself. If there's a form of Krishna that doesn't require that, then it's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he's just giving out, we saw in his pastimes, he's just giving out love to God and even to unqualified people. And suddenly they become trainees, absorbed in bhava bhakti. How is it possible? Only because he's Mahavananya, the most merciful. He's also Krishna. Rupa Goswami at great length in his Loka Bhagavatamrita argues quoting from the Vishnu Purana about the difference between the main forms of the Lord. There are three major forms of the Lord: Narasimha, Ramchandra, and Krishna. But of those three, the other two don't exhibit all the qualities of Bhagavan in full the way that Krishna does. And the quality that he emphasizes in this particular passage is Krishna's mercy. Krishna is more merciful than Narasimha. When Narasimha killed Hiranyakashipu, he did not get liberation. He had to take another birth. Because he was killed by God, he took birth with unrivaled opulence. He had what would appear to be Sarshti Mukti. Ravana, he had this benediction, but his heart was not free of passion, and he didn't know who had killed him. He was in ignorance. So he maintained his envy, and he made the fatal mistake of trying to enjoy the Supreme Personality of God, his personal pleasure potency, his consort Sita Devi. So he was killed again, but even then he wasn't given complete liberation. He took birth again in a similar station, this time as Shishupal. And Shishupal had the same unrivaled opulence, but his envy was even worse now, because this time he knew who had killed him. So he was seething with envy his whole life, and he was constantly thinking of Krishna unfavorably, and he was constantly chanting Krishna's name in disgust and with great hatred. But because Krishna is so merciful, he purified him in that form. Gopi Paranadana Prabhu explains in his commentary on this passage that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, has a particular way of insinuating himself into the heart of the conditioned soul. And because he's all attractive, he becomes especially purified by that process. And this is actually what happened to Shishupala. We know that he was given the curse that you can blaspheme Krishna 100 times and get away with it, and after that you're out of here. So that's what was happening, and everybody was ready to kill Shishupala, but Krishna's just very patiently hearing and counting 97, 98, 99. And when it came time for the 100th blasphemy, then Krishna took out his disc and threw it at Shishupala's neck. But by Krishna's divine grace, by his inconceivable arrangement, Shishupala was getting purified at every step, whether he knew it or not. Finally, the veil was lifted, just as that disc left Lord Krishna's finger and was flying towards his neck. Then he realized, oh my God, I've been in Maya this whole time. This is actually the person I love more than anyone else, and I've been mistreating him in this way. He's my eternal Lord and Master, and now... So he somehow, his Krishna consciousness was actually awakened just at the moment of his death. And Rupa Goswami, remember, he's quoting Vishnu Purana, all of this is in the Vishnu Purana of Parashramani, Vyasadeva's father. So Rupa Goswami points out that this is the evidence that Krishna exhibits mercy in a superlative degree more than any other incarnations. So this is Krishna's special potency. And so you can imagine, if you have the most merciful form of God, Krishna, who is kind to you, then what greater benediction can you ask for? You can't, but he gives a big greater benediction even than that. When he goes into particular ecstasy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he changes his form and his mood according to Srimad Radharani's sentiments. And at that time, he gives away love of Godhead freely. Even Krishna doesn't do that. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he does do that. So, does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, this is beautiful. Thank you so much. Yeah, I have one more question, if you don't mind. The question, what time is it? 8:20. Okay, so, another question that I had was, when we discuss devotional service, or even when we practice devotional service, from the material platform, we have motivations to acquire, you know, like it's described here, how this is a stream of fruit activity. So we're going from one, you know, acquisition to the next, you know, an acquisition of education, an acquisition of money, acquisition of a beautiful wife, and so forth. Then now we're telling people to give up those motivations, give up directing themselves towards these things, and take up pure devotional service. But as it's described here, Krishna is a bhaktya, he's beyond the perception of the senses, and from the neophyte condition, we really, you know, can't really grasp what, you know, is being presented to us fully. So what motivates a person to give up, you know, their material desire and actually surrender themselves to the process of pure devotional service?
That is an easy question. What motivates us is association. Satam prasangam avagirya sambhido bhavanti krit karna rasayana katha tat joshanam ashvapavaryavartmati shraddharatir bhaktirana pramishyati. In good association, when we hear about Krishna, we feel it to be medicinal. But it's not only medicinal, it's very pleasing to the ear, It's very pleasing to the heart, and it's enlightening to our intellect as well. And we get enlightened by hearing that. Tat Joshanat, from that enthusiasm thus generated, we're very quickly placed on the path of liberation, and we progress very quickly in these eight stages of bhakti that Goswami outlines, beginning with Shraddha. Shraddha Ratir, Bhakti Ratpramishati. Shraddha is the very beginning stage, Rati is one of the final stages, Prema. So, good association, and particularly by the spiritual master's association, associating with his instructions, associating with his service in this way. Yes. Yasya prasada, bhagavat prasada. And then Krishna reveals himself according to our surrender. Okay.
Could you conclude with what is a pure, our pure motivation?
Well, Goswami gives the definition. No karma, no gyan. Just bhakti. No other desires, only bhakti. Now the whole process of Krishna consciousness is really only meant to illustrate for us or demonstrate for us just exactly what that practically means. And that's what takes years and years and years of development. Because we hear these things. Just like yesterday we were talking about mystic powers. This whole section, the whole chapter is about mystic powers. So we were observing that, in fact, we do want mystic powers, but we don't know it yet. Because pratisiddhi, which is what we talked about yesterday, that's just the desire to get things, and we all want to get things. Today we're talking about prakamya, which means the ability to fulfill your desire. And who doesn't want his desires fulfilled? You see? So all of us actually want these things. But we don't really we don't connect the dots all the time. We don't make the connection between the theory that we're reading in the books and what's actually going on in our lives. We don't make that connection. But when we associate with pure devotees whose faith is deeper than ours, because their experience is also deeper than ours, faith comes not only from associating with devotees and from Krishna's mercy, but it also comes from our own experience. When we follow the instructions and we follow the process of bhakti and we make some advancement, then we realize that it actually works. Everything that they say is true. We realize that directly, pratyaksha bhagavan. And at that point our faith is fortified. So in good association this happens. And the association of such persons to whom it's already happened, that can also inspire us. It gives us direction, it gives us inspiration. I remember one time Janardhan, my godbrother, he said, being with Tamal Krishna Goswami for half an hour is like reading Srimad Bhagavatam continuously for 3 months. That's the meaning of this verse. Satam prasangam namavirya sambhita. It's as if the katha that's already there, we're hearing it every day, but it takes on some special life because it's infused with that person's realization, with that person's faith, with that person's love. And that's elevating us.
That verse that you keep quoting, this essence worth of living?
325.25, a most important verse. You can even argue that Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhaktivedanta Sindhu expands upon that verse only. We see him that way. Because, you know, he begins and ends at the same points that are mentioned in the verse. Shraddha, adau shraddha, and then prema.
Thank you.
Okay. Alright, thank you very much. I'll voice you to the Prabhupada.